Before I get into the games for Match Day 8, I just want to follow up on a couple things. The first Howler Dummy World Cup episode also looked at the protests in and around the games and got the thoughts of a reporter embedded with the United States men's national team, who will be sharing his comments each episode. Definitely worth a listen. In other all-important World Cup news, I finally got clued into the Beats controversy at the World Cup. FIFA has banned the headphones during matches and media events, even giving the officially licensed Sony products to players in an attempt to convert them. How's that working out for you? Finally, just a plug for my blog and podcast. My blog is soccernomad.wordpress.com. I post there about kits, books, soccer memories, and more. My regular podcast can be found at austinlong1974.podomatic.com or on iTunes. Just search Soccer Nomad. As always, hit me up on Twitter at austinlong1974. On to the games. First up on day 8 was Colombia versus Ivory Coast. Both teams won their opening matches, so 3 points here could see one team in the round of 16 by the end of the day. Just before the national anthems were played, the TV coverage did an overhead view of the stadium in Brasilia before moving to the inside. The structure has a fantastic look inside and out, and despite the large Colombian contingent, there were still a lot of empty seats for this critical game. The first half was a struggle. Colombia got off to a much better start with a couple of half chances, but James Rodriguez was not as sharp as he was against Greece, but showed his class with a fine ball to Gutierrez, who, as the announcer rightly said, fluffed his lines. And he might have been offside. Guardado was bright on the right-hand side throughout the match and a real menace to the opposition. Ivory Coast struggled to find the rhythm as Boney was marginalized again. Yaya Toure appeared to be struggling, and I wondered how long he would last. He appeared labored or lazy, I couldn't quite tell. Throughout the half, attacking players Gervinho, Grindel, and Boney showed great flexibility in leading the line for Ivory Coast. 0-0 at halftime, but the second half was a much different proposition. Rodriguez scored on a corner kick 63 minutes in with a powerful header moments after Cuadrado had a shot tipped onto the post. Quintero was introduced early in the second half, and I was interested to see what his influence would be. As the announcers pointed out, Quintero moved to the middle, and Rodriguez went to the outside. With about 20 minutes to go, Bamba's turnover, not really a surprise, led to Quintero sliding home to double the lead for Colombia. Just when people were heading for the exit, Gervinho scored a quite spectacular individual effort and set the stage for a dramatic finish. However, the equalizer never came for Ivory Coast, and the difference between Ivory Coast playing long ball and playing the ball on the ground was dramatic. Building out of the back was either a long ball turnover or dwelling on the ball. Short, crisp passes usually led to chances or at least pinning Colombia back. Drogba again came in on the hour mark, this time for Boney, and in the same way as the game against Japan, Aurier got more time on the right-hand channel to serve balls in. The last 15 minutes was wide open as the teams went back and forth. Colombia tried to kill the game while Ivory Coast tried to equalize, but the match ended 2-1. Colombia only needed a draw against Japan, while Ivory Coast may need all 3 points against Greece. The afternoon match saw Uruguay play England. England had an unchanged lineup but moved Rooney central and Sterling out to the right. For Uruguay, Suarez started and Lugano was out. As the game kicked off, I wondered what impact Suarez would have. Cagey starts the match with not much in it. I would have to say the referee was the main focus for the half, making some strange decisions, especially on 50-50 challenges, and had a chance to send Godin off twice, once for a deliberate handball to break up play and another for an elbow to the throat of Sterling. Even as a United fan, I was frustrated with Rooney and Welbeck. Cheaply giving a possession and wayward shooting were more prominent than their shining moments, with Rooney barely missing with a free kick and Welbeck causing Caceres a little concern. Staying on Rooney for a second, Daniel Harris wrote a thought-provoking piece about Rooney's current situation on Deadspin. Tracing the history of the player, he now looks at his future, and it's not bright. Christian Rodriguez really should have opened the scoring, but his blistering shot went just high. England appeared to have gained control of the game towards the end of the half, and then Suarez scored. Johnson closed down Cavani, but showed him the inside, and his cross found Suarez, who headed back across the goal. The two teams came out in the second half with the Uruguayans up 1-0, and they immediately blitzed the English and could have doubled their advantage numerous times, with Cavani's chance very reminiscent of the PSG game against Chelsea in the Champions League. Rooney continued to struggle with his shooting, and Hodgson's first change was Barkley for Sterling, which was surprising. Sterling looked up for it every time he touched the ball, and it caused the Uruguayans a lot of problems. Meanwhile, Tabarez brought on Stuani for Ladero. England finally equalized after a moment of brilliance from Sturridge. Surrounded by two or three players, he wriggled free and found Glenn Johnson, whose incisive run found Rooney at the far post for his first World Cup goal. The momentum went back and forth, and a catastrophic error slash stroke of luck changed the game. Mousselaire's punt went the length of the field, glanced off an English defender, and of course found Suarez, who hammered the ball home to seal the points. Lambert was brought on as the last throw of the dice for England, but to no avail. Neither team looked that great, especially in the back. Moments of class stretched the defenses, and honestly, a lot more goals could have and should have been scored. What about Suarez? Comes back, sticks the dagger in England, and will have to do more of the same against Italy to secure progression. Looks like England won't move on, which I predicted, and I'll be curious to see what kind of lineup Hodgson sends out against Costa Rica. Welbeck should be dropped for sure, probably for Lallana, and Henderson should sit for Barkley from the off. I missed the evening game of Japan-Greece due to an over-40 game. Not too bothered about missing this. Plus, I needed to play to start getting back into shape after several weeks of sitting around and drinking. Turns out it was another 0-0 draw. I had Japan winning, but Colombia is officially through to the round of 16, hoping Ivory Coast takes care of business against Greece so that they can advance as well. As for my over 40 game, it was a good run. Had a decent first half, but once fatigue set in, I kept going at players and getting taken down. My own fault. We were up by plenty of goals, and I should have just passed the ball around. Wrapping up, ahead of the U.S. game, an article by Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal was pointed out to me. His piece noted that Klinsmann's decision to drop Landon Donovan registered in the American sports psyche and possibly signifies that America's soccer love might actually be real. Seemed to be typical of the posts and comments that spring up before, during, and after the event about soccer and is this the time and how about those posers wearing shirts and scarves from a foreign country. I used to care about other people's opinion of soccer in this country. I don't anymore. The game is growing slowly but surely, and now I have access to more football than I could have ever dreamed of. Keep writing, everyone. I'll keep ignoring. What you can't ignore is 4.4 million Americans watching Brazil versus Croatia. Also, as a point of reference, the top 10 markets for the U.S.-Ghana game per Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated were as follows: number 10, Norfolk; number 9, San Francisco; 8, Orlando; 7, Providence; 6, Baltimore; 5, Columbus; 4, Boston; 3, Hartford; 2, New York City; number 1 was Washington, D.C. Interesting mix of cities there. Okay, enough of that. Tomorrow sees Italy and Costa Rica battle out for control of Group D, and the second matches of Group E with France seeking a place in the round 16. Until tomorrow, ta-ta.